Hello and welcome to the American Writers Museum Author Talks podcast, where we bring the power of the written word straight to your ears. This week, poet Michael Warr reads and discusses his work and brings his fellow poets and friends on stage to perform their work. The following conversation originally took place May 15th, 2022, and was recorded live at the American Writers Festival.
Welcome to the Millennium Park Partner Stage at the American Writers Festival. I'm Linda Dunleavy, Director of Development at the American Writers Museum, and I'm delighted to introduce the second program of the day, sponsored by the Poetry Foundation. This program is presented in conjunction with the AWM's upcoming exhibit, Dark Testament, A Century of Black Writers on Justice. This initiative examines the enduring relevance of works by black writers during the 100-year period between the end of the Civil War and the beginning of the Civil Rights Movement. Today, we welcome Michael Warr, whose books include Of Poetry and Protest, From Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin, The Armageddon of Funk, and We Are All the Black Boy, as well as his friends, to host an open mic and poetry reading. Welcome.
Thank you for being here. It's wonderful seeing all of you. And we're doing something a little different because my good friend Quincy Troop, I think wisely, decided that he wasn't going to travel with the upsurge happening across the country, but he's otherwise fine. But what we're going to do something a little different. I'm going to do my featured reading, and we're going to hear from some of my poet friends who I knew were going to be in the audience. They're going to come up here and take the stage. So I want to thank the American Writers Museum, you know, just for putting this whole thing together. I've got a chance to see the museum yesterday, and I encourage everyone, if you haven't been there, to do the same. And I also want to especially the Poetry Foundation. Michelle Boone is here with us, who is the executive director there. If it wasn't for the Poetry Foundation, I might not be here today for this event, so I really appreciate that. So some of the poems that you're going to hear today, because I know so many of you in the audience, they will be poems that you've heard not only before, but maybe many times before. But I'm going to promise you that I'm going to share a few things that most of you have not heard. And I'm going to start with a poem from Quincy, because even though Quincy isn't here, his book is here. So I encourage you to get it. This is an amazing accomplishment. You know, it's Duente poems 1966 through now. And Quincy's one of my poet mentors. I have many, but he's one of them. So I'm going to just read this poem of his, because the reason I've been doing these readings with Quincy, helping to promote his book, and this is a poem that I like to read because it's from San Francisco. It's actually in the neighborhood that I live in San Francisco, or near it. And it is called Shades of Blue for a Blue Bridge. And I like reading it because its location, but also it's a great poem. Shades of Blue for a Blue Bridge for Mildred Howard, Joe Rudolph, and Yori Wada. One, three shades of blue evoke Minnie's can-do. Sue Childs, Yori Wada. Two, Jimbo's Bop City, John Lee's Boom Boom Room, history riffing blue matzo balls, fried chicken soba. Three, the Chikoku Club inside J-Town, bold rebels jamming across from Blacktown Udon Grits Barbecue. Four, cherry blossoms blooming in Lady Day's hair, green and fat back, sashimi staining kimonos. Five, you walking Fillmore, crossing Geary with Duke, streetcars running over ghost tracks, pig feet and vinegar. Six, indigo blue and white, red satin sticky fingers handling chopsticks, hot cornbread, sweet potato pie. Seven, memories brought back in a blue mirror, gefilte fish, kimoji, lox and bagels. Eight, Fillmore Auditorium, jamming beneath mouths of blue, Bird, Monk, Nihonmachi, a fake dividing line. 9, mixing it all up, the cultural jambalaya stew, kabuki, white linen, silk, Coltrane. 10, music, the glue, singing, new images of multi-you, rapping in the sweet blue air. So as you can tell, you know, he references J-Town in there. And so that whole area is really kind of a mixed culture of black culture and the Japanese culture. So I love that poem. But also it makes me think of one of my poems that is based here in Chicago. And with all that food and music in the poem, I have to read my poem, Hallucinating at the Velvet Lounge, to Malachi Thompson, Chicago, April 25th, 2004. So this poem is in my third book of poems, The Armageddon of Funk, published by Tia Chucha Press, which also was born here in Chicago. Hallucinating at the Velvet Lounge, to Malachi Thompson, Chicago, April 25th, 2004. When Malachi blew his horn, I dreamed of cornbread, yellow mounds with burnt edges on the velvet's culinary altar. His sharp cut riffs morphed into squares of cornbread islands, floating in streams of warm butter, clinging to the ribs of my memory, speaking in trumpet tongues of passages and uprisings, ancient pain and good time jiving, sacred beats and blues timing, drive-by crying and signifying, an opiate and side of oppression. A crater chunk of bacon-infused sweet potato, chicken-smothered maple pecan, custard-filled, smackling, crackling, jalapeno-infused cornbread. The crepe of the slaves now sold at Whole Foods in this jazz-drenched town built of golden bricks and smokestacks, billowing fumes of corn on the cob and catfish, my mind lost in music and metaphysics, reminiscing the Sunday manna served beside my mother's succotash. Thank you. That's also in the Armageddon of Funk. And this next poem is a poem that was influenced by Quincy, both kind of directly and indirectly. It's actually dedicated to him. And when I wrote it, I was unaware of a poem that he'd written called The Day Duke Raised, May 24th, 1984, for Duke Ellington. So I hadn't read that poem until Duente came out. And way back in the 80s, I wrote a poem, again here in Chicago, called Duke Checks Out Ella as She Scats Like That, which is a poem I read a lot. And that's also in the Armageddon of Funk. So kind of I see these two poems as connected. And even for me, the style of it also was from an early influence from Quincy. Duke checks out Ella as she scats like that to Quincy Troop. When Ella starts scatting, she magnolia planted beside Duke playing that tonal Ouija board. And he swings her that slick startled woman, you're too bad, intonation. When the Duke do that, survival becomes a god to marvel at, even as a creator of Mount Kilimanjaro. Survival transmuted from sanctimonious sanctioned genocide to African angels, swinging at singing like a trumpet made of cloud and lightning, dropping walls in a way that can only be called biblical, metaphysical, and the umbilical between heaven and Hades, where the devil is an angel stringing sounds that defy atrocity. When Ella starts scatting in an approaching layer of time, Nina Simone wells of four women after Lady Day casts southern trees in a bright white light that not only dreamingly signaled death, but was death. And we are majestically resurrected by Mahalia. A miracle happens, continues to happen, more than a mere resurrection, a triumph over inhumanity. When Ella starts scatting because the trumpet man Armstrong momentarily, then momentously forgot his words and spontaneously started this ingenious tongue. And James Brown put horns and strings and funk and things, all a primal electrified scream, all in the same thing. And Papa's got a brand new bag. Tells us it is never ending. Always something new in a penetrating the old, like the digital ripping off of the G-Father's analog riffs by hip-hopping cap Callaway's of today. A ghettoized tribute to his funknosity, to global tenacity, to the Yoruba way that lives in every beat and B note created by our creators when Ella scats like that. Thank you. I think most of you will not have heard this piece before. It's not even published yet. It's going to be published in it's come out in an anthology that I was asked to contribute to. This is a poem that I was asked to select one of Lawrence Ferlinghetti's poems, so to do a poem in that would be after what they call a poem that's after the poet. So this is a poem that's after Ferlinghetti. It was originally, I was asked to do this for his 102nd birthday, and he was he passed away just before the anthology came out, and then they had to kind of wait another year or so to update the anthology. And so I wrote this piece after, it's called What is Poetry? After Lawrence Ferlinghetti's What is Poetry? For the collection Light on the Walls of Life. That's the name of the book, Light on the Walls of Life, a tribute anthology to Ferlinghetti. I'm just going to read parts, some excerpts from this poem, because it's rather long. What is Poetry? After Lawrence Ferlinghetti's What is Poetry? Poetry is what the gods created on the eighth day. Poetry is a capture of fire in defiance of darkness. Poetry is language tripping accidentally off of our tongues. Poetry is the ancients' way of making us pay attention. Poetry is the village choir revolting inside your mouth. Poetry is the eruptive ripple at the center of an explosion. Poetry is a magnifying glass in our collective eye. Poetry is the heavenly exhalation of earthly revolutions. Poetry is the shaman's trickery for seeing around corners. Poetry is the trillion utterances trembling throughout existence. Poetry is the cave entering our dark, damp bodies. Poetry is the act of soaking in the sun forever. Poetry is the ecstasy of unexpected ejaculation. Poetry is the movement of moon symphonies, bowels, and time. Poetry is the unforgettable balm your mother gave you. Poetry is a resurrection of assassinated hope. Poetry is the scaffolding surrounding our floating souls. Poetry is Patricia in satin blue wandering through Chicago snow. Poetry is a colibri hummingbird dancing on magnetic currents. Poetry is the incessant search for another word for love. Poetry is the endless attempt to explain the inexplicable. Poetry is the meticulous peeling of Neruda's onion. Poetry is a condensation of the cosmos into metered meaning. Poetry is the organic pulsing machinery for making memory. Poetry is the pool player's seven in the hands of a book thief. Poetry is a cyclical trance induced by Coltrane's impressions. Poetry is a relentless reckoning with unrelenting oppression. Poetry is the fulcrum for upending the earth. Poetry is what the archangel says it is. Poetry is. Thank you. So one of the lines in here, and I just realized, is poetry is a pool player seven in the hands of a book thief. So that's a reference to Gwendolyn Brooks' poem. And that poem is a poem. I used to tease Gwendolyn that I was a poet because of her, because I stole that book when I was a kid. And, I've been writing poetry ever since. So I'm going to read a poem that I wrote, a praise poem to Gwendolyn. I just want to say I'm just really impressed with the presence, again, that Gwendolyn has at the museum, the American Writers Museum, because I was looking for it. The bartender asked me, who's your favorite writer? And I said, well, you know, I have to say Gwendolyn Brooks. And I couldn't find it at first, but then I found it, and then I saw it in a few other places. As a matter of fact, there's one point in the museum where Gwendolyn's, a banner of Gwendolyn is right next to Eddie Two Rivers. So that was also ticket. And I'm looking forward to seeing more Gwendolyn's, you know, in the museum and her literary offspring. So this is a poem also in the Armageddon of Funk, and it's called Her Words to Gwendolyn Brooks. An archaeologist, not a lexicologist, figured it out. The word was a woman, mingling among the aromas of Ethiopia, brandishing a painter's brush in a dig territorially defined by string. The archaeologist swept away ancient crust and sediment, finding language alive and agitated instead of the fossilized fumara of the long-dead Ramapithecus. Words wrapped in rhythm, pleasure, knowledge, and pain. Words as sharply defined as an Ashanti sculpture. Words of an African dynasty made of peoples not restricted to kings. Words that survived Atlantic. Words that survived Atlanta. Words that survived migration, segregation, integration, and false resolution. Words worn as bracelets, amulets, and weapons. Words that were up long before they were down. Word up. Words that give more than she has taken. Children's lives reweaves first through her poems and then through their own words that could weave a world. Thank you. So I'm going to end with a poem that, and then we're going to hear a poem from some of my poet friends in the audience. But this is a poem that, again, I think a number of you have not heard before. There's been so many Zoom readings, you know, during the pandemic. I think I had somewhere between 35 and 40 Zoom readings, you know, between March of 2020 and the end of 2021, or a little bit into 2022. So there's been a lot of them, and I've been reading this poem there. It's called What Not to Do, an Unfinished Poem, and it's a serial poem because I've been adding names to it since 2018 of mostly black boys and men who've been killed by the police unjustly. And the victims, there's so many names in this poem that I'm not going to read the entire poem today. I'm only going to share an excerpt of it, but you can find the most recent update of the poem, the full poem, online, and also in print in Obsidian Literature and Arts, the African diaspora. And I've come to an agreement with them where all the updates to this poem, which is going to happen every quarter, you'll find them there. Unfortunately, there will be new names. So, What Not to Do, an Unfinished Poem. Breathe, Eric Gardner choked. Sell, Lucy's. Resist to death. Stand, Amadou Diallo in vestibule. Carry, wallet. Look out of place. Act suspicious, 40. One fired, 19 bullets kill. Park, Tanya Haggerty on side of road. Talk on cell on side of road. Shot on side of road. Drive, Philando Castile with broken brake lights. Carry legal firearm. Announce you have a gun. Shout, not reaching for gun. Shot, 5 bullets to heart. Approach Oscar Grant, the police. Beg not to shoot. Kneel, shot anyway, in back. Carry Tamir Rice, toy gun. Shot. With real bullets. Carry Romain Bisman prescription bottle. Shot, 2 bullets to torso. Not carry Keith Laurent Scott, a gun when told to drop it, shot. Be Natasha McKinnon, schizophrenic. Be superhuman, stunned while shackled 50,000 votes to death. Be John Crawford, an imminent threat. Shop for Walmart air rifle. Carry Walmart air rifle at Walmart. Talk on cell phone at Walmart. Shot with real bullets at Walmart. Be George Floyd, a suspect. Be a 6'7" black man. Be claustrophobic, asphyxiated, knee on neck while handcuffed. Run, Stephen Clark through grandmother Shard. Carry cell phone, shot 20 bullets, fired 8, hit primarily in back. Jog Ahmaud Arbery, shot 2 bullets, kill while hunted. Sleep Breonna Taylor in bed, shot 8 bullets, kill. Sleep Rashard Brooks at Wendy's. Flee for daughter's birthday. Point did taser over shoulder, shot 2 bullets in back. Walk Elijah McClain home, look sketchy, play music, wear ski mask, shop for iced tea, carry iced tea, act crazy, whisper can't breathe, beg to go home, be superhuman, be anemic, be suspicious, be on something, be undetermined, choked to death, breathe. So, thank you. That poem is hard to get through, but to me it's very important to read it. So thank you for bearing with that. And if you want to keep up with that poem, like I said, those are just excerpts from it. Go to the Obsidian page. Duriel Harris, who's the editor there, also from Chicago. Chicago's literary people are doing great things. So I want to fit everyone in. So please hold back from your praise of me. You're supposed to laugh. And just get to the poem. I'm asking everyone to read one poem. And as someone whose last name starts with a W, I'm going to do things a little differently, because we always go last. So I'm going to reverse it, and I'm going to go in reverse. And so that means the first poet is Avery R. Young.
That boy, were you there when they did what they did to that boy? Were you there when they snatched him out of my uncle's house? Were you there when they snatched him out of my uncle's house? Were you there when they brought him to the wife? Were you there when they brought him to the wife? Is this him? 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 Hey, is this him? Is this him? Is this him? Oh Lord, were you there when they brought him to the barn? Were you there when they brought him to the barn? Oh, were you there when they picked up a brick and played, touched down in the face? Were you there when they picked up a brick and played, touched down in the face? Oh, were you there when they took a fan belt, tied around his neck, and threw him in the river? Were you there when they took a fan belt, tied around his neck, and threw him in the river? Were you there to see him body weigh in the water all night long? Were you there? Feel him body weigh in the water all night long. Oh, were you there? Hear him body weigh in the water all night long. Oh, were you there? See him body weigh in the water all night long. Were you there? Were you there when the mama got the call? Were you there? Were you there? Mama Mamie got the call. They got in it, 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 they got him mad. White boy got in it. Hey, they got him mad. They got him mad. Oh, they got him mad. Were you there? Were you there when they showed a mother, when they showed a son, were you there? Were you there? When they showed a mother, when they showed a son, were you there? Were you there? Did I scream? Weak in the knees. Were you there? Yes, baby. Were you there? See God cheering. See him all dressed in black. Were you there? Oh, were you there? See God cheering. See him all dressed in black. Were you there? Were you there? Hear brothers cry. See sisters faint. Were you there? Were you there? Hear brothers cry. See sisters faint. Hey, were you there? Were you there? Were you there? They hear that white boy brag about what he had done. Whoa! 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 Were you there? Were you there? Hear that white boy brag about what he had done. Hey! I got a nigga. Got a nigga. Got a nigga. Green-eyed nigga. Stuttering nigga. Red-bone nigga. But that's what I'm getting. That's what I'm getting for whistling at white women. Were you there? Were you there? When the jury came back and said not guilty. Were you there? Were you there? When the jury came back and said not guilty. Were you there? Are you here? Juries keep coming back saying not guilty. Were you there? Are you here? Jews keep coming back, saying I'm guilty. Now tell me, who wanna cry for you? Who wanna drive mama tears? Hey, who wanna run for you? Who wanna sit for you? Who wanna speak for you? Who wanna stand for you? Hey, who gonna? Hey! Who gonna live?
Who gonna live? Wow, powerful, powerful readings. Michael Avery. Michael, so happy to have you back in town. Thanks for including your friends. I'd like to read a poem called Wigia, which is based on the Reign of Terror, a horrific period of American history when outsiders married Osage women and killed them for their head rights. The poem is spoken by Molly Burkhart, whose sister Anna Kyle Brown was murdered during the Reign of Terror. My own Talchi family lived in Fairfax during this time. A line from this poem was used as the David Grounds book, Killers of the Flower Moon, which is being made into a movie by Martin Scorsese. Wigia means prayer in Osage. The epigraph reads, Anna Kyle Brown, Osage, 1896 through 1921, Fairfax, Oklahoma. Wigia. Because she died where the ravine falls into water. Because they dragged her down to the creek. In death, she wore her blue broadcloth skirt. Though frost blanketed the grass, she cooled her feet in the spring. Because I turned the log with my foot, her slippers floated downstream into the dam. Because after the thaw, the hunters discovered her body. Because she lived without our mother, because she had inherited head rights for oil beneath the land, she was carrying his offspring. The sheriff disguised her death as whiskey poisoning.
because when he carved her body up, he saw the bullet hole in her skull. Because when she was murdered, the leg clutchers bloomed, but then froze under the weight of frost. During Zaga Ziga Setha, the killer of the flower's moon, I will wade across the river of the blackfish, the otter, the beaver. I will climb the bank where the willow never dies. Thank you.
I'm very excited and honored that this poem is going to be included in the upcoming anthology called Wherever I'm At. It's an amazing collection of many Chicago poets and Chicago-related poets published by the Chicago Literary Hall of Fame, Third World Press, and After Hours Press. And it starts with a little explanation. It's called Ferris Wheel and Navy Pier. Modeled after the first Ferris wheel, which was built for Chicago's 1893 World's Columbian Exposition, the Navy Pier Ferris wheel had 40 gondolas, each seating up to 6 passengers, until it was replaced in 2016 by the Centennial Wheel. Ferris Wheel at Navy Pier. The old pier leans its narrow shoulder against the shifting lake. From the pier's center, the Ferris wheel rises, a strange flower, 15 stories high, whose petals spin down the slow drift of lake wind. The wheel curves to the sunlit east, bows to the steel west, where black slabs of buildings stab the sky. Waves slap the pier like a dealer shuffling cards. Below, a tide of lovers and children turns and flows. In the wheel's shadow, a girl presses herself along the salt sweat of a boy's thigh. The Ferris wheel raises clapping hands to the sky. Riders rise, crest and descend, descend and rise, while the sun spills down its silver coins. Beautiful city, terrible dream.
Harmonica, March 11th, 2019, among the hundreds of items found in a World War II mass grave at a forest site near Eversberg, Germany, grouped together were a harmonica, a glasses case, and a spoon. I had assumed when I wrote this it was a historical poem, but now, Ukraine. What songs did they play? What notes are left? Who danced to the tunes? Were the sounds small as a last breath? Large as a newborn cry? Did the chords circle and pulse, filling the tin chamber like a heartbeat? Did the pitches scrape final barefoot steps to burial? Left are the harmonica's reed plates, the inner workings, a dull brass rib cage, the sweet spot, which air flows through to make the instrument flutter alive. They must have kept their music near, trembling loose, Polish polka or Russian waltz. We cannot know what refrain was played. I wish it to be Ode to Joy, Beethoven's Ninth, filling the ears of the murderers and the murdered. We all know the last tune, to our cores, the air, the bullet, the fresh dug dirt, the long buried empty glasses case, the distance, the full harmony of never seeing human as human, never hearing the melody making soul, never seeing, never tasting the long buried empty glasses case, the dignity spoon, the beloved harmonica calling to us from fresh self-dug graves with low chant. Know us by what we loved, a world full of songs sung and silent.
I thought I should read something from my Chicago book, Slow Trains Overhead. This is the first poem, Adams and Wabash. Where moonlight angles through the east-west streets, down among the old for America tall buildings that changed the streets of other cities, circulate elevated trains overhead. Shrieking and drumming, lit by explosions of sparks that harm no one, and the shadowed persons walking underneath the erratic waves, not of the lake but of noise, move through fog sieved by the steel mesh of the supporting structures, or through rain that rinses pavements and the L platforms, or through new snow that quiets corners, moods, riveted careers. Working for others with hands, backs, machines. Men built hard towers that part the high air. Women and men built, cooked, cleaned, delivered, typed and filed, carried and delivered, priced and sold. The river and air were filthy. In 100 years, builders would migrate north a mile, but in those modern times, this was all the downtown that was. And circling on a round-cornered rectangle of tracks run the trains, clockwise and counter, veering through or loop the loop and out again. Why even try to list the kinds of places men and women made to make money? Not enough of them, yet too many. From slow trains overhead, some passengers can still see stone ornaments, pilasters, lintels, carved by grandfathers, great uncles, and gone second cousins of today. Gargoyle heads and curving leaves like memorials for that which was built to be torn down again someday. For those who got good wages out of all this building, or were broken by it, or both, yet whose labor preserves a record of labor, imagination, ambition, skill, greed, folly, courage, cost, error, story, so that a time before remains present within the dark, spark-lit, loud, careening now. Thank you.
used to need glasses, but I do, and they're at home, and it's so good to see so many old friends. I worked with Kent Foreman performing. We performed all around Chicago for a year or two, and this is for him. He died in 2010, and that's when I wrote it, and this was from the work we did together, and has a lot of pieces of his work in there. Foreman's Law. 1. As a grave digger, rusty spade cast down beside a pile of rock-bound clay, why must fire always end in ash? What's that you say? Everyone works, trades, pays, and finally burns. Once upon a life, you wrote, it is the law. 2. Now there's trades, and then there's tradesmen, and who better to dig Max and Abby and Oscar Brown Jr., outlive and live to dig some more? I mean, dig. The dignity seniority accords. Dig Lorca, late night jazz, and hothouse flowers, all fever and grace. 3. So there's vocations and paychecks and things we do without pay, fashioning words into bridges and wings, a craft we wouldn't trade for anything. There is no price tag on this. See, there's trades and trade-offs, and in due course, there's changes. Colors change, loyalties change. Finally, the guard changes, one stepping out as another steps in. It's nothing we didn't already know. The victors have always taken history hostage, tortured it into its present form, lips sewn shut, the law as rulers write it. 4. Think about it. Cars break down on Route 94, hit the skids and collide with each other. Tickets are issued by officers of the law. 5. But why does fire always end in ash? Ask the cigarette. Its smoke rings rising in a room that holds no truck with angels. What's that? What's that you say? Law of thermodynamics, entropy, extinction? Damn, that's cold. But then, it's winter in Chicago, and it's cold all over. 6. I believe things come around or else they don't. I believe in stolen moments and great balls of fire. Love's kindling, the hotter the better. Once I fell for a fragrance of fiction, a fastball hit by pitch. The Bucktown pigeons saw me lame and pegged me twice. But you called every day to see how I was mending. And now I have fallen in love with all its wrappings ripped off, and it is good. I believe it's everything we burn that gives us heat and light. So if ash is what it all becomes, well, that's life. You don't have to dig graves to dig that. 7. So, my friend, foreman of gravel and clay, how about we swap a song or two again, dueling in each other's duet for a minute, a moment, no answer. It's late, and there's a law, no exceptions. You hear that clock? It's unrelenting, wouldn't you say? The work's overwound, ticking faster than the fastest man. How are we to count the hours, and to what end? 8. Look, there's a crimson gold sun burning off the clouds above Lake Michigan, whatever the hour. What counts is this: you were radiant. Even now, I can still see you glow. Thank you, Michael.
So I had this long prologue before reading this because if you're a Chicago poet, you believe in foreplay. So you're guaranteed to have good sex, but you'll have to hear the introduction to the poem first. This is an ekphrastic poem based on a piece, and I don't know the sculpture's name, but it's three masks and all the faces are looking down. It's in three parts, and it's called Unseen Eyes. One, prayer. Like Tamir, their downcast eyes are not guilty and unworthy of the lack of innocence denied. Skin color forever guilty of being a danger. But in danger, endangered youth species yearning for the wilds of concrete jungle freedoms, days spent balancing on fences and avoiding the grisly consequences of sidewalk cracks, shooting from guns that were pink and green to cool the day, running just cause you wanted to be the fastest, finding sweetness in penny candies and backyard mulberry trees. I blame Skittles. Now and later's never presented any such threat. Streetlights and porch house play come with the night, lightning bugs and mosquito bites, the faint smell of charcoal and burned hot dogs filling the air. And there you come, she hopes, smelling like all outdoors. Two, breathe. I cast my eyes downward in denial, except this cowardice, I think. I am terrified of this season of night. Morning comes and I fear what the day needs from me. An unworthy soldier, I am weary of this road, Lord, facing this dreadful fork, except there is only one way. Let me be weak before I rise. Let me cry in the clouds of the mountains I am forced to climb. If grief is memory, let me remember it well and wholly, and mourn completely what is lost. Let me sit in sadness for a while before I turn to stone. Before I am brave and become steel, I must crystallize before I can shine in the daylight. Even now, I am terrified of this night. Three, wish. Blushing, I hide my eyes from his gaze, ever worthy, but love always seems to question. The one that wraps me warm like a blanketed sunset, his thumb rubbing my palm center as if sweet fulfillment could be unearthed there. Bells chime me with lust and love, and is it true, goodness, gracious, warm yellow cake, deliciousness, and ooh-wee, yes, ooh-wee. The day's ending glow holds my sight, but love always seems to question, is it mine to have? Is it mine? Is it mine? Is it mine?
Warm greetings, everyone. Michael, good to see you, bro. Long time in the flesh. Thank you so much for the invitation. Julie Parson. Avery. Just some of the few faces I recognize at the moment. Nice to be here. You know, I wish I had some of my newer work that is at home downstate where I live, because that work, I think, addresses the sort of the current state of the dystopian sort of state that we're living in now, you know. Poems that stand up to the tyranny, to the gangs of police that hunt us down. I think for those of us who don't pack pistols, who don't carry guns, our poetry has to do that work for us. And particularly in the time where we are living in a kind of what I like to call a coup d'etat in slow motion. And many years ago, I wrote a poem called My Country Piss on Thee. But unfortunately, that was a long time ago, and so my memory is not the way it used to be, whereby I could remember my poems by heart. So I have a different piece here, kind of fun. Also, I should say that I'm really old school. I see young people using their cell phones to read. That's really not me, but this is a convenient thing right now. So this poem is called My Neighbors. My neighbors are a clan of serene barbarians whose sole purpose, it seems, exists in disturbing the peacefulness of my tiny sanctuary. Hidden between city concretes and atmospheric black holes, this sanctuary, filled with ancient bibliographies and fine tawny port from Oporto. Here, spirits dwell in divine lechery, and there are those coming to worship, in effect, have called them here. But every night, about 3 a.m., the barbarians enter with obstreperous feet. Boom! Here comes one now. Listen as they proceed to move every piece of their barbarian furniture across the floor. Boom, clack, pow. Now, this would be their barbarous music. They'll go on like this for 2 hours or more as I contemplate the virtues of government and the in-virtues of impatience. Which of them shall I assassinate first? But at last, how I've lost the will to suppress stupidity, bump off belligerence. So I meditate on neither this nor that and on the soul in everything. I ring up the wizards to join me for a twilight mocha java latte, pop in a CD of esoteric chanting, and the barbarians, now flaccid and befuddled by bata drums and my bakango, dissolve into the underground for 3 to 6 weeks until another sprouting. Later, I work on my character. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AWM Author Talks podcast. Next week, best-selling science fiction author John Scalzi discusses his recent book, The Kaju Preservation Society, recorded live at the American Writers Festival. Now go, be inspired, and find the mind of a writer in yourself.